Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to One Up Delivered Through the AI Podcast Channel. I am your host as usual, Guy Drinkle, and joining me is Carl. How are you doing, Carl?
Not too bad, Guy. How about yourself?
I'm good. I can't even remember what the last show was, but it's been a little while. But, Carl, the season of games is almost upon us. I mean, pretty much the football season ends, then game season starts, or the news cycle starts, I suppose. It's be busy for us in the next couple of weeks, won't it?
Yeah, certainly when E3 is only around the corner, and now obviously with the way these are rather nipping, all taking place in the 1 week, things are likely to be spread over a few weeks again, which means we'll have plenty to talk about and plenty to speculate on. So it's good to get back on it now for a bit of warm up before we have shows coming fast and hard.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to do this one where pretty much news and a bit of things about remakes. Then next week we'll find something to talk about. And then we'll probably get into the E3 stuff because I think it's mid-June, isn't it? I think that's when the E3 week starts. So probably get one show and then do the E3 preview, which is normally a thick boy. So you'll have to forgive us that. I'm now apologising for shows 2 weeks in advance because we've ran over. But you know us by now. But, Carl, we are on a tight schedule for our liking. So we've got about an hour or so. But we have got some things to talk about. Shall we get through the news and then onto the topic?
Sounds good.
Right, so first news story from Square Enix calls Outriders its next big franchise as it reaches 3.5 million unique players. We've obviously both played this, so we'll get into that in a sec. But do you want to take us through the story itself?
Yeah, so the story comes from Matt Wales over at Eurogamer. So give the full story a read over there if you haven't already. And Matt writes, developer People Can Fly's co-op-focused looter shooter Outriders received a bit of a mixed critical reception at launch, but publisher Square Enix seems pretty happy with the public response, saying the game is, quote, poised to be the company's next big franchise, end quote, after 3.5 million unique players flocked to the experience in its first month. Things didn't exactly start off smoothly for Outriders when it launched on PlayStation, Xbox, and PC at the start of April. Of course, with server woes leaving many players unable to access the game for almost 3 days. Despite those early wobbles, Square now says Outriders has seen over 3.5 million unique players since launch, amassing an, quote, average playtimes of over 30 hours, end quote, and, quote, extremely high engagement for cooperative play, end quote. At least some of its success can probably be attributed to its day one launch on Xbox Game Pass, but regardless, Square says Outriders is now on track to become the company's, quote, next major franchise, end quote, suggesting more installments could eventually be on the way, Not bad for a game many had written off after some early, rather underwhelming reveals. For its part, People Can Fly says it's, quote, very grateful for the community support and feedback, end quote, and offers assurances it will, quote, continue to listen carefully, end quote, and that it's, quote, committed to improving and enhancing the experience in the coming weeks and months, end quote. And as I said, you can read the full story over on Eurogamer. Are you surprised at all, Guy, with how many people are playing this one?
No, because it's been quite a lull period for games, hasn't it? I think, what was the last big game? Cyberpunk. And that's different. That's obviously a single-player experience and kind of a one-and-done, especially the way it launched. But outside of that, I mean, outside of Warzone and Fortnite, is there anything there that's new and interesting? I don't think there is. Like, Destiny 2, that has its events, but the last DLC is kind of a quick one. It wasn't some, like, dramatic big overturn thing that drew a lot of people back, or it may have done, but I don't think it would have kept them. Whereas Outriders looked a bit meh, but when the demo came out, people seemed to be more impressed than they thought they'd be with it. And then the fact it launched into Game Pass, so you had a game that I don't think a lot of people would have been willing to spend 60, 70 quid on, but the fact it was in Game Pass, and people with Xbox, and I presume it was in the PC Game Pass as well, that's a lot of player base that you could get in there for quite a cheap price, whereas if it was just a standalone game, not in Game Pass, and everyone had to pay 70 quid for it, I don't think the strength of the demo would convince a lot of people to pay that. Whereas getting that, even you're a PlayStation person, you came on Xbox to try it on Game Pass. So yeah, I think the fact it launched in there, I think that's why it's had probably a surprising successful launch. I mean, what do you think? You've probably played more of it than I have. So I kind of played like 3/4 of it and then just never ended up back on it, but I did enjoy what I played.
Yeah, no, I think you're onto something in regards to the timing. I mean, you look at last spring and, you know, at the start of lockdown, Animal Crossing came out and it done absolute gangbusters, and a lot of people, right and rightly so, attributed it to the lockdown. And I think now, fast forward about 12 months to when Outriders came on, a lot of places are still in a lockdown to some degree. And add to that, as you said, there's not a lot of new games that have come out in recent months that are really going to attract attention. So I think it was really good timing for the game. And as you said as well, Game Pass has played its part. Mind you, it's important to note, I think the game's charted quite well on PlayStation last I checked as well. So people are buying it. But, you know, I'm sure that the millions of players, at least a good chunk of that 3.5 million are probably on Game Pass. So that's playing its part. I mean, the game itself, I've completed the story. Haven't really played it since, but I've been meaning to get it back into it to play the kind of post content, the excursions, I think they might be called, because that kind of brings you to the true end of the game per se. I mean, it's a solid shooter. It can be fun to play with friends, but it is a janky game. I mean, there's a lot of glitches, and even with all the patches, I still often encounter glitches. I think, like, people might be familiar, there's contracts in the game and you have to like kill a target, and I've had situations where I've been unable to kill them because they kept glitching off the map or become invulnerable when they get to the stage where you have to execute them, and all you can do is laugh because it's that kind of glitches. But I mean, I've been willing to accept the glitches and, you know, not kind of walk away, and I gather a lot of people have as well. So I mean, it's not a great game. I doubt it's going to be in the conversation for Game of the Year. But it's a solid game, and I can certainly see why so many people are taking to it and giving it a go.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, as I said, the lull period really held. I think if you released at the peak of like Destiny and The Division, that they're the competitors for it, I think it'd be third place, and that's only because I'm struggling to think of other games similar to it. But in terms of being a success for Square, they really needed it. Like, the Avengers was so bad. So bad. And, yeah, I think a game that's kind of surprisingly been a success, because I think if people had to pick, would you think the Avengers would be a success, or would you think Outriders would be the success? 99% of people would have picked Avengers, wouldn't they?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's funny that they come from the same company, and yet they, you know, and I wouldn't even say it's a case of they got it so right with Outriders, but they got it right to a degree. Mm-hmm. Whereas with Avengers, they just got it so wrong, despite it being such a hot property, and it seemed almost foolproof, you know, to make a Destiny type game set in the Avengers universe, but it just didn't work at all. And I don't know what that comes down to. Does it maybe come down to expectations? You know, do people expect more from something related to the MCU, or, you know, even though it's not technically part of the MCU, but, you know, linked mm-hmm. to it? Or, you know, do people expect more because of how good Spider-Man was as mm-hmm. a game? You know, I can't exactly put my finger on it, but it is funny nonetheless that it's the same company, and yet they've two games in a not quite the same genre, but similar genres, yeah, to a degree, and they've gotten one so wrong and one's turned out so right, despite probably low expectations.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, if they do continue it, make an Outriders 2, or do like a revamp thing where, I don't know, Destiny 2 is not a sequel anymore, it's like a continuous hub. I mean, if Outriders does like a big revamp, like, say, Taken King on Destiny, would you go back to it?
Yeah, I mean, it probably depends on what's about at the time. I mean, like, I loved Destiny and put a lot of time into it. Yet, when Taken King came out, I didn't play it because I'd kind of moved on to other things. And, you know, I was happy with the time I spent with Destiny, but it's just, you know, it was hard to get the gang back together and get back on there. So it really depends on kind of what I'm playing at the time. But I certainly wouldn't rule that out.
Yeah, I'd probably jump back in. I'd jump back in if that's the thing with these games. If you don't have mates to play, it's kind of almost an empty experience. But if you've got a couple mates on, it's almost transformative. So yeah, I think if you could get a couple, I think it's only three that can play, isn't it? So if you get a couple mates, I think it's so much more help. But we'll move on. We will move on. I'll read this one. You can save your old voice, Carl, as I butcher my reading skills. Ex-Monolith VP Kevin Stevens starting new EA studio. This is from gamesindustry.biz from Brendan Sinclair. Developer Electronic Arts today announced it has tapped former Monolith Productions VP and studio head Kevin Stevens to head up a new studio in the Seattle area. The studio doesn't have a name yet, but it will be working to create an open-world action-adventure game. Stevens knows the genre well, having overseen Monolith Productions during development of Middle-Earth Shadow of Mordor and Middle-Earth Shadow of War. The move will also reunite Stevens with EA Senior VP and Group General Manager Samantha Ryan. Ryan was president of Monolith Productions in the late 90s, and the pair worked together at Monolith and its eventual partner, Warner Brothers Interactive Entertainment. I mean, there's not too much to add from that point, Carl. I mean, we're getting a new EA studio. I mean, the first thing to start is EA the right place for these types of games? Because is it EA before Jedi Fallen Order, or is it EA after Jedi Fallen Order? We still kind of have to wait for these answers, don't we?
Yeah, I mean, EA is it's an interesting publisher, you know, to look at. I mean, people still kind of look at them as the bad guy, but I mean, in reality, they've probably started to do things a bit better in recent times. Obviously, you mentioned Jedi Fallen Order there, and I think Respawn might be kind of their star studio these days, you know, bringing out games like that and Apex Legends and Titanfall and that sort of thing. And then, of course, obviously, we have the the games they publish from smaller studios. And, you know, only recently, I think It Takes Two obviously has been a big hit for them.
Yeah.
So I think they're earning a lot of kudos from those kind of moves. And, you know, it feels to me this move is another step in that kind of direction, and in terms of kind of just dissing itself from just being this publisher that makes sports games that drain you dry with microtransactions. They still do drain you dry with microtransactions, but they're doing this other stuff on the side, which earns some kudos. And of course, you know, I'm not saying they do it for free. Of course, Jedi Fallen Order particularly made a lot of money, but it's an interesting move, and it's nice to see EA diversifying from just the sports games. And I mean, they were under kind of, there was a threat of maybe them becoming even more enveloped in sports games, obviously following their purchase of Codemasters, and you know how many racing games that's inevitably going to lead to. But obviously Monolith were a great studio. Or, well, they still are a great studio.
Well, but we'll see. We got a new story about that.
We'll get to that. You know, Kevin Stevens obviously was a very important head at that studio. So he knows the genre, and, you know, a lot of people might pick out the Shadow of Mordor and Shadow of War series as kind of possibly the standout in that genre in recent years, although of course Assassin's Creed would have something to say about that. So it'd be very interesting to see what comes from this, you know, and you know, could it potentially be a Star Wars game? Could it be some other license? We know EA likes to dip into licenses. And given, of course, Monolith's history with creating a licensed series, you know, that might be a good fit for this new studio. But, you know, I suppose that, you know, as with anything, when you don't even know the name of the studio yet, nor what they're working on, you know, it is really a case of time will tell. I mean, what's your thoughts on this one, Guy?
Yeah, I think it's always good news. It kind of links to the story we're going to tell probably five minutes or so, because we've got one in between. But yeah, I think Monolith, probably more so Shadow of War than Shadow of Mordor. Like, I enjoyed Shadow of Mordor, but Shadow of War with the Nemesis system and how well it worked on that, I thought that was a spectacular game. Like, the ending was dodgy, and I'm sure EA will like it, where you have to have microtransactions to get the real bloody ending, which is just mental. I'm sure they won't do that, Ian. But no, I think, obviously, being Lord of the Rings licensed helps games like that, but it's an excellent game nevertheless. And as you say, EA do love a license. Again, linking with the story, it could be Star Wars, it could be DC. Wink, wink. That's what we're kind of hinting towards. Maybe Marvel. Maybe Disney give a Marvel game to them and see what they could do. I'm not sure. I mean, top of my head, a Daredevil game? I could see that with Monolith.
Yeah, it could work.
Probably not the biggest name. Can't do Spider-Man. Ghost Rider or something like that? I don't know. I'm not too deep in the comics. But yeah, I think Monolith, they just make really enjoyable games. And if you can put the Nemesis system, and they probably can't because it'll probably be stuck with Monolith themselves, but if you can make that type of game, it's just going to be fun. And as we've seen EA previously, and hopefully from now on, they do make or allow teams to make great games. It's just before Jedi Fallen Order and Respawn became so trusted, it was in such a bad lull period with Andromeda getting rid of Visceral, and what was the other one?
Pandemic before that.
Yeah, that was it. Getting rid of them, binning off other Star Wars projects, Anthem. It just seems to have wasted quite a lot of the studios, but I don't know. If EA can turn over a new leaf, not make everyone use the Frostbite engine, I don't know, Respawn are on Unreal, aren't they? So if you can get I don't know, get BioWare back on an engine they're probably more familiar with, this new lot, whatever they want to use. EA is gathering, because Codemasters, that buying of them, maybe not the biggest thing, but you get F1. Like, EA, probably the king of sports games with 2K, aren't they, really? But EA now have F1, NFL, football. What am I missing? They did have a basketball game, but I think they've been done because 2K is better. Hockey, UFC, I think they technically still have the boxing license, which they need to like start using. So yeah, they are the king of sports games, and to have these people like this in the back pocket, it makes EA the powerhouse that it's kind of always been, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, they've never quite gone away, but they just obviously focused. But it seems they're more spreading themselves out once again, and it's good to see, because you know there was a stage when, you know, and it's sad to think about, but when EA had some of my favorite studios and they just unfortunately closed them down like pandemic. But you know, with this being a new team, you know, I suppose in a way there's at least we don't have that risk of something, you know, we know and love being closed down. Unless their first game is awesome and then EA closes them down. But you know, we'll let them get their first game out before we think about that.
Well, they've got to think of a name before we can barely talk about, never mind the game. Dear. But, I mean, not having a name, I mean, moving on to this next story. This is it, Carl. I know I'm the Crash Bandicoot guy, but there's another set of games that I love probably more so than anything. And that is goddamn Time Splitters.
Spoilers. Yeah, that's our third story. New Time Splitters in the works from reformed Free Radical Studio. And this comes from VG247 from Dom Pepiat. And Dom writes, there's a new Time Splitters game on the way, and it's coming from the original founders of Free Radical Design, who have reformed under publisher Deep Silver. The new team, which will be based in Nottingham, UK, is led by, quote, key original team members, end quote, Steve Ellis and David Doak, a tweet from Deep Silver reveals. Quote, to finally be able to confirm that the studio has been formed and that we have a plan for the next Time Splitters game is incredible, end quote, said Ellis, who will be studio development director at the company. Quote, while we cannot tell you anything more at the moment, we look forward to sharing information in the future, end quote. In the short term, the team is expected to build up its studio in Nottingham, and development on a new game has yet to get underway. But it's nice to see that Deep Silver is doing something meaningful with the Time Splitters license. Fans have been eager to see a new release in the series for well over a decade at this point. The last Time Splitters game launched in 2005. And you can read the full story over on VG247. So, as you said, Guy, we will have a new Time Splitters. It's probably a few years away, but nonetheless, it is hopefully coming.
It exists, and that's enough for me. I mean, going off my stumbled speech here, I love this game. I think the three of them were probably big parts of my childhood. Like, this was the perfect couch-based shooter, wasn't it? It was one that you had with your mates when they were around. It'll be interesting to see how that develops in the modern age. But just the comedy, the randomness, just having a gingerbread man for no reason as a character and stuff like that. Monkeys being arseholes. Infected mode. There's so much things that I love about this game series. I mean, do you have similar memories or any memories at all from this series?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I recall my friend and I, when we were younger, went to our local video store to rent a game for a sleepover at his. And we picked out the first Time Splitters and we brought it back and we played a bit of the campaign on co-op. And then we just started playing bot matches, and we were playing bot matches until about 5 in the morning. It was insane, and we never really looked back from there. I think he bought the game shortly afterwards. He bought the second one. He bought the third one. Another friend of ours and his younger brother were big fans as well, and we used to play it when we go to their house. It was really, it reminded me kind of GoldenEye. It was that kind of experience,
yeah,
you know, that
show.
Kind of couch multiplayer. And like, to be honest, I wasn't a big first person shooter fan back in the kind of PS2 era, and TimeSplitters was the one game I just loved in that genre. And I'm just so excited when I saw this news the other day. I was a, cannot wait till we finally get our hands on. I know they're, you know, they, with the blessing of Deep Silver, that a bunch of fans are working on a sort of a remake / remaster of the original game. Although I think that project's been in the works for a long time, and I haven't seen any recent updates. But it's nice to know that there is a new game coming out, and that it's not just a cash in. That it's, you know, it's actually coming from the original creators. So, you know, that this is in all effect a TimeSplitters 4, and that really matters to know it's not just a, you know, oh, it's a TimeSplitters name, but it's a completely different game. You know, it's not the game you knew and loved. So I think that's what's really important here.
Yeah, the fact that, I mean, there probably will be remasters and a brand new game at the same time, you'd probably think, because I must have finished the campaign. I remember the time, obviously it's called TimeSplitters, but the time traveling stuff where with Cortez and stuff like that in the third one, if I remember correctly, where he's going through different periods of time. I might be chatting absolute wham here, but it's a long time ago. But the fact it's a new one, the multiplayer was the main thing about TimeSplitters, I think. So I don't think you really need a remaster. It's just recapturing the magic of multiplayer. And that's maybe a worry, because how can you do it? Like, we all have the similar relationship. Let's use COD as an example. Nothing's ever going to match COD 4, COD 6, COD World at War to me nowadays. Can a game that's been away 11 years? No, that's bad maths, guy. For 16 years. Can they recapture that?
Yeah, no, I certainly understand where you're coming from with that. I mean, we've seen people try to do it in the past. Obviously, I mentioned GoldenEye, and I remember kind of in the 360 era,
yeah, I think it was,
they tried to do a new GoldenEye game, and you know, a lot of people got excited, and then it was completely trash. But I think what's, you know, as I said, the thing to take away here is it's the original people that are working on this, or at least for the most part. So I think that's really important. Nonetheless, it is a challenge. You know, I get where you're coming from. It's so long, and it's different. You know, games have moved on a lot since then. I don't think you could simply give kind of a game on par with the original games and that it would be successful, because I think there's been so much quality of life and that kind of thing in the first person shooter genre since then. So, but I'm sure, obviously, you know, the developers know that, and I doubt they're going to just try and release a 15-year-old game. So I have confidence that they can deliver, but whether they will or not, I suppose is up in the air. You know, as with anything, when a company tries to return to an old IP.
Yeah, I mean, this is perfect news.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If he end up announcing an army of two, I think I've got the perfect news for me. It's not something to worry about till the game actually exists in some physical form. It's such a good thing they've got the original people on, so at least they'll get the tone and the comedy and the madness of it down, I presume. But yeah, it'll be interesting. Like, you can't really just release a game from 2005 with updated graphics. It'll have to be somewhat... I mean, shooters now, I know you've kind of moved beyond shooters and stuff, and most of them are battle royales now, but all of it's just boring and realistic. Like, I say that in Fortnite, you can build, like, a mansion in 2 seconds with some random wood. But Battlefield's uber-realistic. COD's now uber-realistic. It's almost boring to a certain degree. I just want some mad... shit shooting. I just hope it's arcadey enough but not being goofy at the same time. It's a hard balance. We'll move on because, as I said, time constraints for us, so we don't want to do one of our 2-hour shows. This is a PlayStation one, so I'll do the reading and you can do the talking, Carl. Sony working on 25 games for PlayStation 5, half of which are new IP. Fancy. Well, it sure sounds like... this is from Eurogamer by Emma Kent, I should say. Well, it sure sounds like PlayStation Studios has been beavering away creating first-party games for the PS5. As an interview has revealed, Sony currently has 25 PS5 titles in the works, half of which are new IP. Speaking to Wired, Guerrilla co-founder Herman Hulst shared the numbers and said there's an incredible amount of variety originating from different regions in the pipeline with a mixture of big, small and different games. There are of course several first-party games we already know about, including Ratchet & Clank Rift Apart, Horizon Forbidden West, Gran Turismo 7 and God of War Ragnarok, yet that still leaves plenty of games unaccounted for. Carl, we did... I think it was the last podcast we did with the state of Sony, didn't we? Yeah, of course it was. And this was one of the worries that we had. There was so much... After God of War 2, there wasn't too much announced. Obviously, we knew Guerrilla were working on stuff and so on. And obviously, there was other sequels and what were Naughty Dog up to and stuff like that. But does this ease your... I don't think there were worries, but question marks?
Yeah, I mean, certainly, it's not the first time we've heard something like this from PlayStation. I think it was only a few weeks ago, Jim Ryan suggested that PS5 would have more exclusives than any previous PlayStation generation. Now, to be honest, I don't believe that, because when you look back at the PS1 and the PS2, there was an insane amount of exclusives, so it'd be hard to match that. But nonetheless, it does seem they're making a big push for exclusives, and that is probably because of the threat of Xbox, which is what we talked about on the last show and on our topic of the show, and the moves they'd have to make. And it, you know, obviously it is important to note, and I think Emma goes on to say in the story that, you know, this doesn't necessarily mean it's 25 games from PlayStation Studio developers. Like, it just means that it's going to 25 games that will have the PlayStation Studios logo attached and been published by PlayStation, but they could well be second party games and, you know, licensing deals with indie developers and that kind of thing. But I mean, of course, that's what's going to be needed if you want to get that many titles out. We also obviously know when we were talking about that, what some of these other titles might be. You know, we know that there's a new Uncharted and, you know, a Last of Us remake and that kind of thing in the work. So that kind of will cross off some of the existing IP. But it's exciting in a way, because it does leave some question marks. You know, what are some of the new IP and also what are some of the existing IP? Like, could PlayStation be going back to some of their IP that they've ignored from the past? You know, I'd love me a nice Legend of Dragoon game. Probably not going to happen, but it'd be nice. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, when PlayStation play their hand later this summer and show us kind of what's coming, you know, in 2022 and beyond. You know, most likely God of War and Gran Turismo are coming in 2022, but what else? So it will be interesting to see what they have in the works and what some of the studios that are working in the dark over are working on.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the fact that Herman Hulst from Guerrilla kind of confirmed it as well, because Guerrilla, I think they've said they're working on other stuff beyond Horizon, haven't they? But they haven't given it a name or anything. I'm pretty sure that's correct.
Yeah, no, we don't know. There's been a lot of kind of will they, won't they over Killzone.
Yeah, exactly. I think Killzone's one of them they can bring back, but probably have to do a relaunch of it. But I didn't read the full story, but it's not just them games I mentioned. I mean, Returnal's just came out, which is great reviews, and Housemarque again, probably similar with Bluepoint. Rumoured that Sony will want more developers in house. Housemarque probably, with the success of Returnal, probably be in line for that, or certainly of interest. And that Kena: Bridge of Spirits, that's this year, isn't it? That's the one from the film people, isn't it?
Yeah, I believe that's coming out later this year.
So Sony, nothing to worry about. Just whilst we're on it, Xbox, nothing. Nothing's confirmed at all. We had the medium. That was about it. So, yeah. So hopefully we'll discuss that on E3 time. But, yeah, there's not really much to add from that, because, again, there's just so much unknowing that we can't really discuss anything. But, yeah, it's pretty much confirming that Sony still have a lot on the go. But, Carl, whilst you were putting together the running order, somehow, only I think it's VG that I saw it on, and obviously on Twitter and stuff, but Warner Brothers Games is in, I was going to say peril there, it's not really, but it's a chance of being broken up again because of the AT&T merger with Discovery. So, yeah, do you want to take us through this, and then we can discuss this, and then on to our topic?
Yeah, so Warner Bros. Games will be broken up as owner AT&T unloads its media business in a sale/merger with Discovery, and this comes from Tom Ivan over at Video Games Chronicle, and Tom writes, on Monday, telecommunications giant AT&T said it had agreed a deal to offload WB Games' parent Warner Media, which will merge with Discovery to form a new standalone company billed as, quote, one of the largest global streaming players, end quote. The transaction, which is anticipated to close in mid-2022, will see AT&T receive $43 billion, and its shareholders receive stock representing 71% of the new company. Warner's games division comprises 11 studios: Rocksteady, NetherRealm, Monolith, TT Games, Avalanche Software, WB Games Montreal, WB Games Boston, WB Games Los Angeles, WB Games San Francisco, WB Games San Diego, and WB Games New York. While WB Games wasn't mentioned in Monday's announcement, a spokesperson told Axios the deal will see it broken up in some form. Quote, some of the gaming arm will stay with AT&T and some will go with the new company, end quote, they said. AT&T reportedly put its games division up for sale in 2020, attracting interest from the likes of Electronic Arts, Take-Two, Microsoft and Activision Blizzard. It was said to be hoping to generate around $4 billion from a potential sale to pay off some of its substantial debt before changing its mind and taking the business off the market. So what do we think this one means, Guy? Because, I mean, it's really speculative, I suppose, because you don't know how things are going to be broken up.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think, seeing from what I've heard and stuff, the new company will want the mobile stuff, which is obviously just an easy money maker. You probably don't have to put enough loads of resources in to get loads of resources out. If like one of them makes the Game of Thrones Conquest game, which is probably one of the bigger mobile games, for instance. But yeah, I think if a lot of the ones that make games, not mobile games, stay with AT&T and then if they want to sell it, it's easy money. But at the same time, if all the licenses go with the new merger, if any of this makes sense, I don't think you can sell, let's be honest, it's for three, maybe four main developers, really. That's not going to make you $4 billion that you wanted before. Like, Rocksteady, great, but their next game's 2 years away and the last game was not up to the same level as the previous two. NetherRealm Mortal Kombat sells itself. Monolith we kind of discussed, and we love the last two games it's made and the Nemesis system, etc. Lego games sell themselves. Avalanche, this Harry Potter games, it's not even Harry Potter, this Hogwarts game's never coming out. Gotham Knights looks fun from WB Games, Montreal, I should say. But again, their last one was Origins, I think. How much are these? Because I mean, let's take Microsoft, because they love buying stuff, seemingly. Are Microsoft going to pull out a Bethesda check to buy all these when they probably really just want Rocksteady, NetherRealm, and Monolith? I don't think they're going to do a Bethesda check for that. They could just hire the people rather than buy the studio.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tricky one because, you know, obviously Rocksteady and WB Games Montreal primarily work on DC games. That DC license is going to be tied to Warner Brothers itself with the new company. Whereas Monolith and TT Games obviously work on Lord of the Rings and Lego games respectively. Now, obviously, those licenses are owned by other companies. So technically, if you know, whoever owns Monolith and TT Games could just kind of renew those deals with the relevant license holders. I'm not sure with Harry Potter. I think it's probably a similar situation. I mean,
I think that's WB as well, I think.
Yeah, like Avalanche obviously are working on Avalanche Software, are working on Hogwarts Legacy. So I'd assume it's similar again that, you know, whenever that deal ends, you could make a deal with J.K. Rowling her company to license Harry Potter. So I mean, it really is just the DC games itself that are, you know, completely tied to Warner Bros. And, you know, Mortal Kombat, I'd imagine, are going to accompany NetherRealm wherever they go. It's their IP. But it's just, you know, how this will be divvied up will be interesting. You know, if it is just that the mobile companies go with the new company and the actual kind of console/PC developers stay with AT&T. But that if that happens, as you pointed out, then Rocksteady and Warner WB Games Montreal lose their license to work on DC games. So it really is up in the air. I'd wonder if, you know, they might just look at kind of selling them off, or at least most of these studios off, especially when they looked at that in the past. It could be attractive just to divide them up and sell them up individually. And, you know, whether that involves making deals for license and or whatever the case might be. But that might be how they look to approach it, because it just seems a bit of a mess to be dividing up WB Games.
Yeah, I think, as you say, I think if WB take the Disney route and just give out DC license, not licenses, but availability to make games to other developers, to other publishers, that might be the easier way to make money than have a whole gaming division. So yeah, you could see, I don't know, random Microsoft make a Batman game, PlayStation make a Superman game or something like that. So yeah, that might be the way to go for them. And then, as I say, I don't think you can sell the whole gaming division without the licenses. Like, people will want pretty much all the talent at all them studios, but is it worth billions to buy them? Probably not. Like, EA getting Codemasters, I can't even remember how much that cost, but you're getting F1 with that and other stuff, obviously. I think they got golf back with that as well. I might be wrong on that. And Microsoft buying Bethesda for $7.5 billion. Probably spent too much, but at the same time, you're getting, it's probably like 8 studios and Bethesda's name with it.
And IP, obviously, yeah. Which is the real attractive thing.
Exactly. You're probably not going to get the IP within this price of buying the studios, are you? So you're really making two deals. You might as well just make a deal for the IP rather than the studios.
Exactly. I mean, the only really IP you're likely to get with this deal, and, you know, flat out, is Mortal Kombat. And obviously that is a big IP in the world of video games, but that's not quite enough to make it worth the $4 billion that they wanted in the past. And a lot of people said that. Rocksteady, in particular, really talented studio, but I'm not sure a talented studio is always worth it if an IP doesn't come with them. I mean, there are exceptions. Obviously, Insomniac didn't really come with much IP to Sony, but that still worked out for them. So it really does depend. But I would be interested in seeing if they did decide to kind of sell off the studios individually, kind of where these places would find a home. I think there'd be a lot of prospective buyers, particularly to pick up Rocksteady and NetherRealm.
Yeah, just whatever it's called. I mean, Tencent will probably just end up buying them all. THQ Nordic, whatever they're called nowadays. They just seem to buy everything. So it'll probably be one of them. But yeah, that'll be a developing story, I imagine, we discussed quite a bit. Because when was it? I think it said it's 2022. Yeah, mid-2022 when the merger's probably going to be happening. So it'll be a long term on that, I think. But Carl, into our topic for the last 20 minutes or 15 minutes of our pod, what did you have in store for us?
Yeah, so I thought we'd talk about video game remakes and remasters. Obviously, it's a very topical thing at the moment. The Mass Effect trilogy recently released, and I'm sure you'll want to talk about that a little bit. There was also the recent news, of course, that Sony are working on a remake of The Last of Us. Demon's Souls was, of course, a successful launch title for the PS5. Final Fantasy VII Remake was one of the biggest games last year. And of course, they're also topical in the news in recent months has been that Vicarious Visions were brought into Blizzard to work on the Diablo 2 remake that has been in developmental hell for a little bit longer than people might like. So I thought we'd kind of talk about some of our favorite remasters and remakes, and also maybe each of our kind of dream choice for the next game we'd like to see get this treatment.
Yeah, it's certainly an interesting one. I think if we start with the Mass Effect one, because I was playing that literally just before the podcast, it's really good. It's, and I say this as someone who loves Mass Effect 1 to 3, apart from the crappy ending. You know if you've played it. I finished Mass Effect 1 in my replay. That game, how do I word this? It obviously, Mass Effect 2 and 3 were a lot more modern than Mass Effect 1 at the time, and you can still tell that. Like, if they did a full remake rather than a remaster, they'd obviously address that, but with it being a remaster, the cover system's still clunky, the driving's better than it was in the Mako, but it's still a bit crap. The rate, like using a weapon wheel and an ability wheel and stuff like that, it's kind of clunky. Like, someone that I can't remember what podcast, I think it was the IGN one, they made a good point where everything nowadays with stuff like that, you've got a key binding or on your controller, you can map it to whatever. And I've done the tutorial mission on Mass Effect 2, and you go into that, you can bind two abilities straight away. They've scaled down the amount of abilities and stuff like that. It just makes it so much easier and so much more sleek. And obviously some people like Mass Effect 1 because the story's really good and they like the RPG elements of it, but I think it just works so much better in 2 and 3. The combat's sleeker. Obviously, if you've not played it, I won't spoil anything for you, but I love the story of 2. 1 spectacular as well. I can't remember much on 3 apart from the ending, but I'm sure it was good. But 2's got one of the best missions ever, but stuff like this, I mean, what has it been, 10 years since Mass Effect 3? Sometimes you obviously wait longer, but I think if you're waiting 10 years and then you get an update, like in 10 years we're waiting, and you get, I'm trying to think of a recent, an RDR2 8K remaster or something like that, I'd play like that. I'd play something like that. And this is what I like about Mass Effect. Like, I'd love a remake in the future, but at the same time, I want new Mass Effect content. So yeah, I think the Mass Effect trilogy, if you had doubts about it, and maybe you don't want to pay the £50, or you don't have the time, Kel, and you probably wait till it's cheaper, it's worth it. I mean, I've 35 hours in, off something like that, in Mass Effect 1, and I won't lie, I was almost rushing through that to get to Mass Effect 2, because Mass Effect 2 is one of my favourite games of all time. So yeah, it you get a lot of content for it. But yeah, it's gonna be class, and I can't wait to get into 2 a bit more. And I've kind of gone off on a ramble and not answered any question at all.
it's just the effect of this show. Yeah, no, I mean, I certainly want to jump on the Mass Effect trilogy somewhere down the road. I just know I wouldn't play it right now, so I'm not going to pay full price for it with that in mind. But I mean, it is, you were talking about the time aspect of things, you know, how long it's been since the game, and you said maybe 10 years seems ideal, and I'd agree with that. I think that's why people have been kind of critical of the thought of a Last of Us remake, because people look at, you know, The Last of Us came out 8 years ago. There was then a remaster of it, not too long after, I think about 18 months down the line. So it just does seem to, even if it's a year or so before that game comes out, even 2 years, it would just seem too soon. You know, if it was to come out in 4 or 5 years, though, maybe people would look at things differently. I mean, obviously remasters and remakes are nothing new in the world of gaming. I think that the earliest example of a remaster I can think of is Super Mario All-Stars, which might also be the most famous one, that it brought the three original Mario Bros. Games to the Super Nintendo, and they looked a lot better. Obviously, as well, I think Super Castlevania 4 was originally going to be a remake of the original Castlevania, and ended up kind of being, you know, sort of a reimagining per se. But I think it really kind of came to the forefront with the GameCube, with the possibly one of the best video game remakes of all time, which is Metal Gear Solid Twin Snakes, and then of course the remake of the original Resident Evil. And I think they probably didn't, they wouldn't have had that 10 year gap. You would have been saying more so 5 or 6 years gap between them and the original games, but people didn't really complain at the time, and maybe that's because remakes and remasters were less common.
Yeah, and I think maybe it's a terminology thing really as well, because remaster, obviously it's obviously always been a term because it explains itself, but it's never, I don't think stuff's ever been advertised as such. Whereas now it's like remaster of your classic favourite, whereas obviously I was too young to know, but the Mario ones and stuff like that, it's probably just getting re-released on a new console. So be it, people will buy it, it's Mario. Whereas now it's like, let's use the Mass Effect one, it's like the best trilogy, unless it's like 4K update. It's like using it as a new game, whereas obviously putting 3 of the Mario games on Super Nintendo at the time would obviously be a big deal, but maybe it's just a hype thing. We live in a social media age and you need to sell stuff or whore stuff out more, don't you? So maybe it's just that, but the hype around remasters now, probably a bit damaging, I think. Because I love remasters. Like, there's not loads I've played off the top of my head, but I mean, you've got one listed here, we'll get out of it. But I'm going to keep using the Mass Effect one. Like, again, probably my favourite trilogy. But would I trade this trilogy for a really new Mass Effect game? I'd probably rather have the new one. Obviously, you can do both at the same time, and they seemingly are, but I still want new content more than old content, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I certainly understand where you're coming from. I mean, I think so, I've seen complaints that people fear that maybe companies will get lazy and just give us a lot of remasters and remakes rather than bringing out new games. And I do think there was a real rush to kind of release these kind of things back on, not last generation, but the generation before with the PS3 and Xbox 360, whereas in a very short period of time, we got like a sort of remastered trilogy of the Devil May Cry games. We got Silent Hill, we got the Metal Gear Solid games, and we got the Splinter Cell. I think they were the four kind of main ones in a very short period of time, and there was very mixed reaction to those trilogies. I think Silent Hill wasn't very well received, but at the same time Metal Gear Solid were, and I think it was Blue Point that worked on Metal Gear Solid, so you can probably see why.
Of course it was.
that was of a particular quality, because they're a particularly good studio when it comes to remasters and remakes, as we've since learned. And I think people at the time, like obviously with as I said, Metal Gear Solid and Silent Hill, obviously both Konami properties. And people wanted to see Konami bring on new teams and make new games within these IPs, or rather license out the IPs. And they still haven't really done that. They've done very little of it. Maybe we got Metal Gear Solid 5 and we got Metal Gear Solid. I can't even recall it. I blocked it from my mind. The zombie one. It was so bad.
Extinction? No.
Survive.
Survive. Christ, Survive. Where
yeah.
did they get
awful, extinction? Awful, awful, awful game. So, I can see that fear that people think that companies might just cash in too often on these sort of things, and they don't want to see that. They want to see new things. But I think if companies keep the balance, it can be nice to get these remasters and remakes, because it can be hard to go back to older games. These new kind of even a remaster giving it a new coat of paint, or, a remake kind of taking what we knew and love and just bringing it into the modern world completely with a new take, can be really good. And I think when you look at the notable remakes, that come to mind, there's not a lot of them that are bad. Things like Shadow of the Colossus obviously was one of the best games on PlayStation 2, and the remake again from Blue Point, was really, really impressive. And of course, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2 from Vicarious Visions was excellent. And we can kind of see probably why Blizzard have dragged them in to help with Diablo 2 and get that project back on course. Of course, the you know, the Resident Evil remakes that have been coming out in recent years are a key pillar of Capcom's revitalization of that series. And I think that might be kind of the best example of how you can balance the new and the old. You know, they're giving us remakes that they've, in recent years, we've gotten Resident Evil 2 remake, Resident Evil 3 remake, and Resident Evil 4 remake is in the works. And I know there's a lot of people who want them to do a remake of Code Veronica as well. But they're still giving you Resident Evil 7, which was a hit. They're giving you Resident Evil Village, which is a hit. You know, they've got other Resident Evil new projects in the works. So I think that's a nice balance. And I think, you know, a lot of companies can strike that balance, can still, you know, bring us back the old games we knew and loved, but still give us something new.
Yeah, I think that's the main point, I think. I'm not even sure which part of BioWare made the Legendary Edition or Collection, whatever the hell it's called. But we do know... I wish they'd call them something rather than just towns, because one's Austin, one's somewhere else. Anyway, doesn't matter. Who cares? You know what I'm going on about. But like, they've got the main ones, but they'll probably be working on Dragon Age at the same time. So they're making the Mass Effect Legendary Edition. It's not. It shouldn't impact Dragon Age, and hopefully won't affect Mass Effect 4. Or just imagine Andromeda doesn't exist and just start it again. But yeah, it's a good one. But I mean, whilst we're here, I mean, Crash Bandicoot: The Insane Trilogy. I love Crash Bandicoot. I should get. I'll eventually get 4. The Insane Trilogy, I mean, it's the perfect Switch game, and the only problem with that is I never got my Switch. now that we can travel and stuff like that, when I think I've got plans to go to Manchester and Carlisle, that Northwest, proper Northwest, at the end of the summer, I can actually dust off my Switch and play games like the Crash Bandicoot stuff. So yeah, I think the fact that these games where they used to be so big hits on PS1, PS2, now that there's new hardware like the Switch and stuff like that, it makes all these old games so much more accessible, I think. And that's why I look like, if I travelled more, or took more public transport to go to work or whatever, like I'd use my Switch to play these games from my childhood. That's where I think remasters of stuff like Crash, Spyro, come in. Any of that particularly like jumps out at you when we think of this, and then maybe we're getting some of our dream remakes?
Yeah, no, I see where you're coming from with the Switch. I think it certainly is a good platform for that, and we've seen certainly a kind of a popularity with that console for kind of ports of older games, you know, not even necessarily games that are being remastered, just, you know, a lot of the Star Wars games have come to Switch recently, and it seems to be a popular platform for playing them, and it's certainly a platform I look to when it comes to playing kind of older games, because obviously with a lot of, you know, remasters and, you know, and ports of older games, they don't necessarily need the powerhouse of your PS5 or your Xbox X or Series X rather to get the best out of them. So I think that's what makes it a solid platform for those titles.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, this has... I'll go into one of my first dream scenario ones. And this is for a full remake, because it does have a kind of a remaster. It updates it a smidge. I won't say it's a complete remaster, but I'd love Halo 1 to 3 get a full-on remaster. Because, obviously, Xbox will have new people coming into their thing. And everyone will be like, ooh, Halo, that's the main one. They'll go on the Master Chief Collection, and I'll tell you this for free. Playing Halo 1 now is bad. If you want to experience Halo, Halo 1 is a tough play. Because, for instance, my mate said he went on the Master Chief Collection. He wanted to do it in chronological order, so he played Reach first. Then he went to Halo 1 and he was like, oh my god, I can't play this game. So I would love a full remake, I should say, of the first three Halo. Because with more new people, presumably, or just even adventuring into the Xbox ecosystem, because there's now a reason to, their flagship thing is now dated. Like, obviously, porting a game from original Xbox is very difficult, but if you got to remake a full, like, one to three, even just one, because three is probably easier to remaster because it was obviously the 360, but one and two, to remake them, it'd probably be easy. It's just print money for Microsoft, I think, and this new generation of presumably incoming Xbox fans, because that's the long-term one with Game Pass and value and all that jazz. You've got to show them what Halo was, because I know you played Halo when you were younger and stuff like that. If you went on Halo now and tried to explain why this game was good, it'd be a tough sell.
Yeah, I mean, with Halo, it's interesting, obviously, because, you know, the first Halo released in 2001, and then we had Combat Evolved Anniversary in 2011, 10 years on. But now it's 10 years on since then. Obviously, then there was the second Halo, and then that got the anniversary treatment as well in 2014. But again, it's been 7 years on since then. But I mean, I suppose the question people would ask is, how many times do you need to remaster or remake the same game before you move on? I suppose that does depend on the game. I wouldn't say no to another remake of Halo. Maybe there might be Halo 3 should get, which is arguably the most popular Halo game of all time. Possibly that should get a remake. Could make sense. I mean, it came out in 2007. It's been 14 years now. It certainly looks a bit dated. So I think if I was remaking a Halo game, I'd probably focus on Halo 3. Actually, if I was being completely selfish, I'd say Halo Reach, because I love Halo Reach. That's just my selfish thoughts.
Best campaign. Best campaign by a mile. But I do, the last mission on 3 is peak gaming, I think. Peak gaming. But yeah, I think any of them, just more good Halo, because it stops 343 making bad Halo games. What would your dream, let's say remaster, you can just slap a coat of paint on anything. A remake is something special, isn't it?
Yeah, there's certainly a couple games I'll mention as kind of honourable mentions for remasters in a moment. But to focus on a remake, for me, and I'm going to be greedy and say three games. Now, they could probably get away with a remaster, but I think I'd prefer a remake of all three. Would be the PS2 era Grand Theft Auto games, so GTA 3, GTA Vice City, and
yes,
GTA San Andreas.
Yes.
And obviously, the only, I want Rockstar themselves to do these remakes, because I think they're the only people we could trust with them. They're still, quite possibly my favorite Grand Theft Auto games were that original, that trilogy, the 3D trilogy, as I think they're referred to. They were amazing, and I just loved it. But they're hard to play now. Like, if you play them, they are dated. And I'd just like to see them kind of get that treatment, a remake. I don't want them changing the story or anything like that. I just want them to be brought to modern standards and re-released. And, I'd imagine Rockstar would prefer to work on something new. But given that there's a whole new generation of gamers who probably never got to play these games, but have played GTA 5 and probably GTA 4 before it, I think there could be certainly money in remaking these games.
Absolutely. I think Rockstar's obviously because it focuses so hard on the next game, they are quite big though, so they could do a remaster, I think. It's certainly feasible. It'd be just tough doing the free remasters. Like, I love San Andreas, that's probably my... I played the top-down ones on PlayStation 1, but the one I probably mostly sinked my teeth into... I played Vice City, but San Andreas was the one I sinked my teeth into the most. So yeah, I'd love a remaster of pretty much any of that. I mean, more GTA content that isn't GTA 5 online would be great, because that game will never die. But no, that's a great show. I hadn't even thought of that. Now, this is probably similar to you, or the similar to your show. I would love a remake of Morrowind or Oblivion, or both, because I'm greedy.
Yeah, and I mean, I could certainly get behind that, and I've seen the argument for both in the past, but particularly Morrowind, given its age. I mean, it's a game I've been meaning to kind of... I've played it in the past, but only for kind of a few hours. It's a game I've been looking to go back and play and complete, because, you know, I've completed Oblivion, I've completed Skyrim, and I want to complete that too. But obviously it is quite dated, and it's really hard. Like, it is really, really hard. Like, you fight a rat, and that rat's going to fuck you up. You know, that's just how that game rolls. It's very unforgiving. So it's one that I could see there being a demand for, and particularly now since Bethesda have been taken over by Microsoft, there's a lot of developers there and demand for, and I think it's something that could make money. So again, that's another one that you can't completely rule out happening in the future, even if we're talking about it as kind of a dream scenario right now.
Yeah, I think it's just it's easy money to make, isn't it? I think with presumably the next Elder Scrolls, if they're going to make it like they did with Skyrim on 200 platforms, I think why not look at a remake? I mean, you'll never have any more resources than you would under Microsoft, because they'll just pump endless cash into anything, seemingly. One more from you before we go?
On the spot, in terms of a dream scenario, I think I'm getting one of mine, which is obviously we talked about it on the last of Knights of the Old Republic. So I'm really glad that that's getting the treatment. On that line, I think it'd be really cool as well if Jade Empire, another of BioWare's games from that era, got a similar treatment. Be pretty cool, because it is, again, those games are hard to play these days. But I mentioned before, and on the remasters, there is a couple I'd like to see, and a couple I wouldn't completely rule out. One would be, not so long ago we got Command & Conquer Remastered, a double package that maybe comprised of Tiberium Sun and Red Alert 2, which are probably my two favourite Command & Conquers. Although I wouldn't say no to Command & Conquer Generals getting the same treatment as well. And, you know, seeing as we've gotten Mass Effect Trilogy, I don't think this one is outside of the realms of possibility, which would be a Dragon Age trilogy, comprised of Dragon Age Origins, Dragon Age 2, and Dragon Age Inquisition, which you wouldn't have to do too much with, you know, maybe just kind of give it that little nice boost to the PS5 and Xbox Series X with the 60 frames, ray trace, that kind of thing. Just a little quality of life in terms of the visuals and performance. That would be a nice thing to see. And again, we could well see it, especially with a new Dragon Age on the horizon. Any more that spring to mind for you?
I was going to say Arkham, but they've had a... It's just a collection. It's not a remaster or anything, is it? I think it's the Arkham collection. But a remaster of them, I think them games hold up too well for a remaster of them too soon. I mean, Time Splitters would have been one, but we're getting a new one of that, so we don't really need that. I mean, it never happened, but all WWE games, or WWF at the time, I mean, who wouldn't want to play Here Comes the Pain, SmackDown 1 and 2, Know Your Role, etc. That it never happened, because one, it was the WWF, so you can't really publish that, but that'd be amazing.
Yeah, I think we talked about how awesome Here Comes the Pain remaster would be when we did our show on the wrestling games way back when. But it's just sadly that's not going to happen. Mind you, you know, people thought that a Tony Hawk's remaster would be very difficult for, you know, due to licensing and that kind of thing, due to the music. And although they didn't get all the songs back, they managed to get most of them back. So you never know. Never say never.
Exactly. All you got to do is cut out Chris Benoit and you're fine. That's probably the the main issue, sadly. But yeah, I think they're the main ones for me. Though, but in years, I mean, maybe an outside the box shout. I'd like to play Witcher 1 and 2 because I never played them, but I love Witcher 3 that much. I'd like more of it and see the trilogy. Albeit Witcher 3 kind of stands on its own a bit.
Yeah, no, I can feel you on Witcher 2 because I've always meant to go back to that, but I know now it'd feel very dated compared to Witcher 3. Witcher 1 I did try to play, and it's a very, very different game to the other two. So I think that they'd have to completely remake that and so kind of bring it into the gameplay of Witcher 2 and 3 more so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I tried. I played 2. It's one of them where eventually you just kind of lost track of it. But if they did probably a remake of 1 and 2, it'd probably be a few years before you'd need one or 3. Maybe it would probably be longer than 10. But yeah, I think if you want to add on to the Netflix series, that they're apparently going to make more Witcher games, I think people probably haven't played 1 and probably 2 by extension as much as 3. So that would be kind of cool to bring their original ideas back to life. But that's it, Carmen. Quickly before we go, I know you've been busy recently. Been playing much?
Not too much since I played, as I said, Outriders and completed that. That was probably over a week ago since I played that. Although I am going to a mate's after we finish recording here to play Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance, which was a bit of a stealth release last week. It released on PS4, Xbox One, and I think it came to Switch this week. It's just kind of it's pretty much the same PS2 game with a fresh paint of code on it, a fresh coat of paint rather on it. But I mean, that was one of my favorite games growing up, favorite co-op games, must have completed it 30-40 times. So I'm looking forward to playing that one, and I'm hoping that the second game in the series gets the same treatment down the road. What have you been playing?
Unsurprisingly, Mass Effect. As I said earlier, I finished Mass Effect 1. I've literally just done the first mission of 2. As always, as Carl knows, as he was trying to schedule playing Gears of War 5 with me, I am somehow addicted to Call of Duty Warzone, even though I hate that game. But I've been playing that. If you've not seen, there's that 80s event on, so you can buy skins for Rambo and John McClane. Unsurprisingly, I went for Rambo, and my mate went for John McClane. So I'm now running around. I only play Rebirth if people play COD. I only play Rebirth, and I'm just Rambo, and I just shank people. So yeah, that's what I've been up to. But Mass Effect is the one. I can't wait to get into 2, and if we do one of these next week, I can just report back to my love of Mass Effect here. But that is it, Carl. We will get out of here, and as we say, it's E3 season coming up, so we will be back. We'll 100% be back. Again, them shows usually are long, but the football season's gone, so we gotta keep you interested somehow. But that'll be in the coming weeks. But again, thank you everyone for listening. Thank you to Carl for joining me. Goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.